What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Joining us for the next chapter of Danielle's book club, Howard Megdahl, the founder and editor of The Nine Sports, including the Women's Basketball Newsroom. Author of Becoming Caitlin Clark, The Unknown Story of a Modern Basketball Superstar. Howard, I've been a fan of yours from afar for a long time. I'm very happy and excited to talk to you today.
The feeling is mutual.
Why, thank you. So now, Caitlin Clark, you know, obviously has burst onto the scene. Why was it important for you personally to write the story of Caitlin Clark?
Really for two reasons, right? One is that this is a real tipping point moment as it relates to women's basketball. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was important to capture how and why we were getting to that moment in time. But there's related to it, just the reality is that a lot of the way in which the story seems to get framed again and again are treating Caitlin Clark like a Big Bang Theory, you know, coming out of nowhere. And I thought it was really important that we get a broader understanding of the extent to which Caitlin's moment is a product of her time and place in a way that reflects on people who have been building to this moment for over 100 years. Mm-hmm. So I thought bringing those two strands together was something that I couldn't do justice to in a story or in a podcast, had to be done in book form.
It kind of goes chronologically. So when you're reading it, you start, it's almost like a sports history lesson. So one of the quotes that you wrote that stuck out to me was about the masculinization of the female athletic program from like the 1900s. And in a phrase that I wrote in the margins while reading it was, they made this so unnecessarily difficult. Why was there so much resistance initially?
How long do you have? I mean, again, the thing that I think people need to understand about women's sports writ large is that the gaps that you see in everything from investment to ultimately even gaps in audience over the years come not from an outcome that was predetermined, but an outcome that was predetermined by the inputs. As long as we've had basketball, we've had women's basketball. James Naismith invented the game in 1891. By 1892, women are playing it at Smith College. By 1896, games between Stanford and Cal are going on the women's basketball side in front of sellout crowds. And what has happened, unlike in men's sports, where typically the game gets nurtured and advocated for again and again, is that there is a backlash against it. And what made Iowa special was that there were fewer hiccups along the way, and that the game was able to be preserved and thus promoted and continue to grow in a way that differed from the way in which girls and women's basketball has developed here in this country in almost every other state in the union.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with someone whose work I've admired from afar for a long, long time. Howard Megdahl joins us on the Infinity Sports Network. Now, Howard, the first initial media push is over for your new book, but what are some of the best compliments that you've gotten on it?
It's been really gratifying to hear people talk to me again and again about how they didn't realize the broader context for this, to understand sort of where it came from. Mm-hmm. You know, I had so many people over the last couple of years, you know, I'm a father in my mid-40s. And so when other fathers come up to me, First of all, they find out what I do, and it's almost like they're looking for absolution to say, I watch women's basketball now.
Yes.
I'm sorry I didn't do it sooner.
Yeah.
And then they ask, why am I watching it now? People kind of want to know what is different about this. And so being able to sort of shed light on that for people has been immensely gratifying. And I keep hearing that out of the book. And that's really rewarding because that was the intent behind it.
So why are they watching it now?
It's everything from the 100-year story to the 5-year story. But I would give you a couple of major strands that correspond directly to Caitlin Clark's timeline. One is that ESPN in 2021 started broadcasting every single NCAA women's tournament game. Mm-hmm. And so we know it's like a birthright in this country. The NCAA men's tournament, you can see every game. It's one of these beautiful parts of March. And ESPN, you know, they'll send out these emails. Like we got one in the spring that said, you know, for the fifth straight year, ESPN is broadcasting every NCAA women's tournament game. And they are, but they could have been doing this for decades.
Right.
Only in 2021 do we start to see every game. 2021, they also make the decision to put a game on network television. And so the first time there is a game on ABC for the NCAA women's tournament. And guess who it was? It was freshman year Caitlin Clark and Iowa against freshman year Paige Beckers and UConn, and 1.6 million people watched it. And suddenly, I remember Gino in the post game talking about this idea, you know, hey, I'll bet a lot of people watch that. Maybe you want to do it again sometime.
Yeah.
And they did. And so by 2023, the NCAA was shamed into using its own March Madness branding for the women. You know, one of the great self-owns of all time, the NCAA had March Madness branding that it owned, but only let the men use it,
right?
And to the detriment of its own women's basketball tournament property. That changes, and in 2023 again we see Caitlin's run to the national title game seen by more and more and more people. And then you get to 2024 and the WNBA, which has struggled for most of its existence to convert the audience from college to pro.
Mm-hmm.
Decision to advertise on the NCAA tournament games that were now, of course, all available on ESPN. And you put that together, and an audience that converts from college to pro in a way that we've never seen before happens in real time. Now, again, there are folks who will say, so see, it wasn't Caitlin, it could have been anyone. Of course, you had to be Caitlin Clark in that moment to show up. You're given that spotlight, but if you shoot 3 for 15, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Caitlin Clark rises to the occasion over and over and over again in order to maximize that spotlight that she's being given. But that spotlight 10 years ago could have meant a similar breakthrough, and we would have seen it through Breanna Stewart, or in 2010 it would have been Maya Moore, or in 1978 it would have been Molly Bolin and Ann Myers Drysdale.
What did you learn while writing Becoming Caitlin Clark?
The biggest thing for me is just how closely related folks from a century ago are to this current moment, right? So in 1921, a woman named Dorcas Anderson became one of the early stars in the Iowa girls high school scene, led her team to a state title, and became one of the early dynasties in girls basketball in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Their head coach was a man named M.M. McIntyre. M.M. McIntyre, also superintendent, who was in the room in 1925 when Iowa voted overwhelmingly to ban girls high school varsity basketball, the way states were all over the country, over a lot of pseudoscience that was intended to quote unquote protect women, but of course did nothing short. But M.M. McIntyre, having seen this up close, what girls basketball could be, spoke up against this ban and led a group of administrators to create what was called the Iowa Girls High School Athletic Union. And as a result, not only did girls basketball continue in the state of Iowa for decades during times where all over the country it was not happening, and you saw innovations and you saw things on the court that helped lead directly to the type of game that Lisa Bluter and Jan Jensen coached and Caitlin Clark played and became essentially the platonic ideal for, you also saw a state that became comfortable with celebrating its female athletes in the process. Well, Dorcas Anderson's granddaughter is Jan Jensen. And again, you just go back and you look at somebody who was the top associate, the associate head coach during the Caitlin Clark years here in Iowa, who helped develop her as a player. If her grandmother doesn't do what she does and influence the game a century ago, we don't have the game that we see today. I mean, it's just the lineage is just so significant. You don't have to play 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon to get there.
So, and you have an array of photos in the middle section. And I'll be honest, I always start there. I'm a visual, very visual person. But why was it important for you to kind of pick this big array of images for the middle?
I just, you know, you talked about the chronological aspect of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent a lot of time thinking about how to do this. And ultimately, I came to, we're going to start at the beginning, and we're going to start at the end, and we're going to work our way like a rainbow style up into the middle.
Right.
Caitlin first is seen by Lisa and by Jan. And so I wanted people to understand these things, the past and the present, are inextricably linked.
Mm.
Both gives us a fuller sense of why we are where we are now in women's basketball, but also, I think, a roadmap to where we're going.
Joining us from Iowa, which is on brand, Howard Megdahl, talking about his new book, Becoming Caitlin Clark, The Unknown Origin Story of a Modern Basketball Superstar. I know the game of women's basketball is made up of a bunch of turning points, and I go back to being appalled by Sedona Prince's posts about the weight rooms in the NCAA tournament. What is the next kind of turning point for the game of women's basketball?
That's a great question. I think you're going to see, of course, the ability to solidify the growth, because what we've seen over these past couple of years has led directly to, among other things, a massive new media rights deal
mm-hmm.
for the NBA, an understanding at the NCAA level that just by getting out of the way, they're able to turn it into a cash cow. You're seeing unit payouts now in women's basketball, which is to say, when you win NCAA tournament games, on the men's side, programs have always received money. They have never received money on the women's side. So you can imagine what that led to motivationally in terms of what you are spending money on as an athletic department. And all of those things are changing, and changing fairly dramatically. Rapid and accelerating change, I think, is the name of the game over these next few years. But it's also, I think, going to be really hard to re-marginalize women's basketball. It is now fundamentally part of the American sports mainstream. And I think it would take a real set of self-inflicted errors for women's basketball to return to that place.
Mm. So, Howard, you're one of the most preeminent people covering the WNBA women's sports, and I would really value your opinion on a few current events for the WNBA. And I think maybe a good spot to start is, you know, the t-shirts, the pay us what you owe us. So how should I and we, you know, continue to fight the good fight and respond to the people that say, well, the league doesn't make money, they should be paying to play in this league? How do I respond to that?
I think it's important that we don't engage in the loudest, dumbest arguments as they relate to women's basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's true generally speaking, but my belief is, once we do that, we're essentially engaging on Neanderthal terms,
yeah,
rather than actually contributing our own oxygen to providing the real information. And the real information, of course, is that the WNBA is growing exponentially. Owners in Philadelphia and Cleveland and Detroit did not decide to pay $250 million apiece for expansion teams because they were eager to go lose money.
Mm-hmm.
That's how American capitalism works. In fact, right, where we are now is that a league that, and again, was held back financially by, among other things, the fact that ESPN had a deal for almost the entirety of the WNBA's inventory that paid $33 million a year here in 2025. The new media rights deal begins at $200 million next.
You don't just live in your home, you live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Year and there's additional inventory that's going to push that to between 250 and 300 million. Media rights are the lifeblood of any league's
income.
And the WNBA is about to have significantly more of it before you get into tickets and merchandise and all these other ways that the league is making significantly more money than it did. So that part has always been a red herring. And again, goes back to the thing I was saying at the top, which is that if ESPN decides this isn't worth anything, and then they don't pay much, and then they don't promote it, and they don't have any pre or post game shows, which they didn't for the longest time, you have a self-enforced ceiling from your media partner. That makes it very hard for you to make money. But anyway, all that has changed and is continuing to change in real time. The question is less about, well, is the WNBA exponentially increasing its revenue? No one has to ask that. That's all public knowledge. The question is, what part of that revenue should the players be getting? And I remain very optimistic that the league is going to put together an offer that ultimately the Players Association comes and they find broad agreement on. Kathy Engelbert remains very positive, very optimistic about these things. There is a revenue share sweet spot clearly for the two sides to reach. And once we see that happen, the economics of the league will not only be set from an expansion perspective, where you have 18 teams now by 2030, you have expansion fees coming in, you have a media rights deal that's set well into the 2030s. But if you have a corresponding CBA and labor piece that goes along with that, then the WNBA is ready to be looking at how do we grow next? Those are the real answers.
Now, Howard, why should people pick up a copy of Becoming Caitlin Clark, The Unknown Origin Story of a Modern Basketball Superstar?
First of all, I spend a lot of time away from my family, locked in a room writing it. But I would say beyond that, I just think there's a real need to understand the how and the why of this current moment. We're present at the creation here. Listen, I'm a lifelong baseball fan, and I always felt a little bit of FOMO whenever you'd read about baseball during the Babe Ruth era, and there was this creation of the modern game as we know it. We're at that moment. 50 years from now, our grandkids are going to ask us about what it was like at this time that Caitlin Clark rose to this level. And at this moment, those, you know, oh, did you get to see Asia Wilson in person? Why, yes, I did. I got to see in college and the pros, here how she turned into the legend that she became, you know, and on and on, right here in New York with Breanna Stewart and Sabrina Ionescu and John Paul Jones and that team, which is going to be one of the great teams, I think, when we look back, especially if they successfully incorporate Emma Meisman, as I expect they will. And so, you know, that's the moment that we're in, and being able to understand how we got here, but also to understand the human element behind it. And people were so generous with their time. Jan Jensen and Lisa Bluter spending hours and hours with me, getting the chance to sit and spend the day with C. Vivian Stringer, who helped build right here in Iowa, like you said, where I am now. 40 years ago, C. Vivian Stringer filled Carver Hawkeye Arena, over a decade before Caitlin Clark was even born as the coach of the team at that time. And so being able to understand the impact of all these folks who led to where we are today, it felt like a significant responsibility to me to be able to tell that story. But God, what a joy to be able to share it with the world. And I think that joy comes through the book. I hope it does.
Yeah, it certainly does. So Becoming Caitlin Clark, the unknown origin story of a modern basketball superstar. Pick it up wherever books are sold, including the online retailers as well. Howard, thanks for taking some time for me. I enjoyed reading this because I love, you know, obviously I'm a proponent of women's sports, but I didn't realize the history of it. So thank you for the education on that. And thanks for taking the time today.
Danielle, I will always have time for you. Thank you.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free, so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.